It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and I'm beginning this segment in Washington, Pennsylvania, home of Washington and Jefferson College, which held its commencement this past weekend and bestowed an honorary doctoral degree on Georgia Congressman John Lewis, who is celebrating 30 years as a representative of Georgia's 5th Congressional District. Congressman Lewis is best known as one of the Big Six leaders of the civil rights movement, and at the age of 23 was an architect of and a keynote speaker at the historic March on Washington in August of 1963. John Lewis, it is an honor to have you. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted and very happy, just very pleased to be here at Washington Jefferson College.
You were born the son of sharecroppers in 1940 in Alabama. How did you end up getting involved in the civil rights movement? What pushed you in that direction?
Well, growing up in Alabama, we would visit the little town of Troy, about 10 miles from where I grew up. I visit Montgomery, about 50 miles away. I saw those signs that said white men, colored men, white women, colored women, white waiting, colored waiting. I would ask my mother, my father, my grandparents, my great-grandparents, why? And they would say, that's the way it is. Don't get in the way. Don't get in trouble. But in 1955, 15 years old, in the 10th grade, I heard of Rosa Parks. I heard the words of Martin Luther King Jr. on old radio. And the action of Rosa Parks, the words and leadership of Dr. King inspired me. And I felt like he was speaking directly to me, saying, John Robert Lewis, you too can do something. You can get involved. And I went away to school in Nashville, Tennessee, to attend Fisk University and American Baptist College. And it was there that I started studying the way of peace, the way of love, the way of nonviolence. And I met Rosa Parks. I met Dr. King. And I continued to have a warm relationship with him while I was in college. And it was there that we started sitting in at lunch counter. Blacks and white students are going on a freedom ride. We were beaten, we were arrested, and we went to jail. And so I got in the way. I got in trouble, what I call good trouble, necessary trouble.
What were the most frightening moments? You mentioned the freedom rides in 1961 and being attacked and beaten. Were those the moments or were there others?
Well, in 1961, I was 21 years old, and a group of us, blacks and whites, left Washington, D.C. on May 4th, 1961, to test a decision of the United States Supreme Court. Just think, in May of 1961, the same year that President Barack Obama was born, black people and white people couldn't be seated together on a Greyhound bus or Trailway bus, leaving Washington, D.C. to travel through Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama. We were on our way to New Orleans. And along the way, we were beaten. We were arrested, left bloody. I will never forget my seatmate. When we arrived in Rock Hill, South Carolina, about 30 miles from Charlotte, North Carolina, the two of us tried to enter a so-called white waiting room. Members of the Klan attacked us and left us lying in a pool of blood. Many years later, a member who had attacked us came to my Washington office, as a matter of fact, in February 09. He was in his 70s with his son in his 40s and said, Mr. Lewis, I'm one of the people that beat you and beat your seatmate. I want to apologize. Will you forgive me? His son started crying. He started crying. They hugged me. I hugged him back, and I started crying. I said, I accept your apology, and I forgive you. That's the way of peace. It's the way of love. It's the way of nonviolent. It's the way of moving toward reconciliation and building what Dr. King and others call the beloved community.
Once you have been attacked, once you have been beaten, What keeps you going, knowing that as you did things like leading hundreds of protesters across the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma on Bloody Sunday, that you were going to be attacked again and again?
Well, you have the ability or the capacity to accept a way of nonviolence as a way of life, as a way of living. You say you may be beaten over and over again. You may get arrested a few times, but you have to keep the faith. You have to be hopeful, and you have to be optimistic that somehow, in some way, it's all going to work out. You can never get lost in a sea of despair, and you just keep going. Because the struggle to redeem the soul of America, it's not a struggle that lasts for a few days, a few weeks, a few months, or one semester. It is a struggle of a lifetime.
We are still struggling in this country. Could you have envisioned 50 years ago or so that we would finally have our first black president, and yet at the same time be experiencing so much racial tension in America between members of the African American community and law enforcement officers, and just the discomfort level that exists still between average blacks and whites in America today?
If someone had told me 50 years ago that we were walking across the bridge, fighting for the right to vote, to participate in the democratic process, that we would have the first African-American president, I probably would have said, you're crazy. You're out of your mind. You don't know what you're talking about. But I remember the night when Barack Obama was declared the winner of the election. I was in Dr. King's old church speaking to a group. And I jumped so high, I didn't think my feet were going to touch the floor. And I cried, and I cried. And several reporters asked me why was I crying so much. I said it was tears of happiness, tears of joy, to see the distance become. They said, what are you going to do when he's inaugurated? And I said, if I have any tears left, I'm going to cry some more. That's exactly what I did. I think we've come a distance. I think we've made a lot of progress. But we still have a distance to travel. I would like to see us come to that point in our communities, our towns, and our cities, where local police officials and young people, young whites, young African Americans, young Latinos, and Asian and Native Americans, can engage in dialogue with law enforcement individuals and attend nonviolent workshops like we did and go through that training so we can respect the dignity and the worth of every human being. When I see police officers on the streets in Atlanta and Washington or any parts of our country, a CTSA officer at the airport, or just doing their jobs, I always say thank you for your service. On Capitol Hill, we have hundreds of young men and young women protecting visitors and protecting members of the Congress. And I always say to them, thank you for a good job. Thank you for what you're doing.
Martin Luther King Jr. advocated nonviolence, wanted everyone who was protesting to act peacefully. I'm wondering, though, if you were ever tempted, as you were being attacked, as you were being beaten, if you were ever tempted to fight back, if you ever felt your hand clenching into a fist.
During all of the days and during my involvement in the sit-ins, the Freedom Rides, the march from Selma to Montgomery, when I was beaten, left bloody, had a concussion on that bridge, thought I saw death. I thought I was going to die. But I was never, ever tempted to retaliate or to hit back. You have to believe in the way of peace, the way of love, the way of nonviolence, as a way of life, as a way of living.
As you look at young people today, and as you meet young people on this campus at Washington and Jefferson College. What are the words of advice that you have for them? Do you see them being as inspired as your generation was? And what is the advice that you have to inspire them?
But this generation of young people, these young students, they're so smart. They're so gifted. We hadn't heard of the internet. We didn't have a website. We had old mimeograph machine. And they can communicate. They can reach people, hundreds and thousands and millions of people in a matter of moments. They will be the leaders of the 21st century. And that's why I enjoy getting out, talking to students, to the very young elementary school student, middle school, high school, and especially college students. They must understand what we did and the way we did it. I am very, very hopeful and optimistic about the future because of these young people.
And do the young people of today understand the sacrifices that you made? Are they as well-versed in the history of the civil rights movement as they should be?
Many other young people are starting the movement. They're watching Eyes on the Prize, that series. But in so many places, when I travel to Europe and other places talking about the movement abroad, the young people, they tend to know more than the young people in America. They recognize names and ask you questions about individuals. I think in America, many of the young people only know about nine words about the civil rights movement. Yes, Martin Luther King Jr., Rosa Parks, I Have a Dream. And I think we have to do a much better job in telling the story of the American civil rights movement. They have changed America and set our country on a better path and inspired hundreds and thousands and millions of people around the world. When you travel around the world, everybody know the song, We Shall Overcome.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and my guest is Congressman John Lewis. We have just a few minutes left. I wanted to ask you, as this is the 30th anniversary year of when you were first elected to Congress in representing the state of Georgia in 1986, as you look back on these last three decades, what are some of the things that you're most proud of having accomplished?
Well, I'm very proud that I introduced a piece of legislation to create a national African-American museum of culture and history on the Mall. It took us about 15 years to get it passed, the House and the Senate. President George W. Bush signed it into law. And this year, on September the 24th, it would open on the Mall. It would tell the story of the struggle and the history of African-American from the days of slavery. Because African-American history is American history. And everybody, and for generations to come, here in America but around the world, need to know what happened and how it happened to inspire people for generations yet to be born.
Before we wrap up, I wanted to ask you about speaking at the March on Washington at the age of 23, which is just seems so incredible to us, to all of us who've followed your story. Describe what it was like to be standing up there on that day in front of those hundreds of thousands of people on the Mall. It must have been just incredible.
But that's not any way that I can forget that day. There was one of the leaders by the name of A. Philip Randolph. He was the Dean of Black Leaders, Dean of Black Leadership, Dean of the Civil Rights Movement. He introduced me, and he said, I now present to you young John Lewis, the national chairman of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. I walked to the podium. I looked to my right. I looked to my left. I saw young men, blacks and whites, up in the trees trying to get a better view of the podium, or maybe of Mr. Lincoln. And then I looked straight ahead, and I said to myself, this is it. and I started speaking. It was unreal, unbelievable. And when I finished, I took my seat. People cheered, and they clapped and cheered. And later, Dr. King spoke. I've heard him speak so many times. And on that day, he transformed those marble steps of the Lincoln Memorial into a modern-day pulpit. And he knew he was preaching. And we felt good. This unbelievable crowd, more than 250,000 people. I think it was many more, maybe 500,000. But when the march was all over, everything was so peaceful, so orderly. President Kennedy invited us down to the White House. He stood in the door of the Oval Office, beaming like a proud father that everything had gone so well. He was so happy and so pleased. And he shook our hands, each one of us. He said, "You did a good job. You did a good job." And when he got to Dr. King, he said, "You did a good job, and you had a dream." That was my last time seeing President Kennedy.
Congressman John Lewis, it's been such a pleasure visiting with you. Thank you so much for being on our program, and congratulations on your honorary doctoral degree that you have received from Washington and Jefferson College. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. I'm honored to be here in Washington Jefferson College.
More Essential Pittsburgh coming up. This is 90.5 WESA.